Sisters and friends, everybody's saying goodbye and starting to leave, and it's very sad, but I always have a hard time getting sad when, although I hate to leave, I don't get sad about it because I always feel like I leave here a better servant. Better prepared to do God's will, and if Christ doesn't return, I look forward to coming back. Are you prepared to do God's will? Talk a little bit about the ecclesia, brothers and sisters, that we are. We are the ecclesia. We make up a part of that huge body of God's servants. And brothers and sisters, we must help. We must strengthen. We must encourage. We must serve. We must support. S-U-P-P-O-R-T. We must support. And we must labor. And most important, we must love the ecclesia. Brothers and sisters, do we love the ecclesia? The ecclesia is men and women. Do we love the ecclesia? We must make the ecclesia's welfare, its harmony, and its spiritual upbuilding are constant prayer and care. Now that's not only the responsibility of your serving brothers, that's all the brothers and sisters working together, not just the serving brothers. It is our responsibility. We must make the ecclesia's welfare, harmony, and spiritual upbuilding our constant prayer and care. Brothers and sisters, there's a time to hold fast and there's a time to let go. In regard to my class yesterday, I believe we need to hold fast to the unamended Christadelphian doctrines. We need to hold fast. You have stated that is your basis of fellowship. The Bible is full of examples of what we should do. I'm going to give you an example of maybe what sometimes our elder brothers gives us examples in this day of things that we should do. First of all, brothers and sisters, this is not 1860. This is 1990. And the truth is being attacked from all sides. For us to hold fast, our body must be informed. It's fine to do your daily Bible readings. Our brothers and sisters must do our daily Bible readings. But in 1990, the servant of God must keep up with what's going on in the Christadelphian community, both the amended and the unamended. If we don't, we're asking for trouble. Now, this Bible school, its basis of fellowship, is the unamended Birmingham Statement of Faith. It is my opinion that if we bring in here brothers to speak and teach that do not uphold this statement of faith in both word and deed, D-E-E-D, write it down, word and deed, we are asking for trouble. Now, I'm going to give you an example of what one of your elder brothers did before he ever asked me to teach your young people. And I'm not saying he's perfect. I'm not perfect either. I met Bob Johnson when I first came up here, and we hit it off fine. He and I like to talk. We talk about our cars, his trailers, our jobs. We talk about his place. We go out and see his fruit trees. We really like each other. We were friends right off the bat. I came up here a few years, and one afternoon, Bob asked me to come with him. And we went down here, and we spent the whole afternoon talking about what I believed. And it was not just the marriage question. You can take that out of your minds. We didn't talk just about the marriage question. We talked about what I believed in regard to the truth. And after we were through, Brother Johnson said, "Ernie, with what you've said, you're in agreement with this Bible school." And he said that we up here, we feel it's important for our teachers to be with agreement, to agree with the things that this Bible school stands for. He just didn't say, he didn't walk up and say, "Ernie, you know, just because I was his friend," he didn't say, "Ernie, I want you to teach your young people." He took a whole afternoon to find out what I believed. And I'm going to tell you what, brothers and sisters, in 1990, this is not 1860, in 1990, we had better find out what our teachers believe and what they do. We must make the ecclesia's welfare, harmony, and spiritual upbuilding our constant prayer and care. Do we love the ecclesia? Hold fast and let go. In our lives, we learn, and especially in our lives in the truth, we learn, we receive instruction, we receive encouragement, and unfortunately, brothers, many and sisters, many times we have to have correction. Can we accept correction? Hold fast and let go. I'm going to read you something here that means a lot to me. It was written by a Jew. The art of living is to know when to hold fast. I can't see that clock over there. There's a glare on it.
10:12.
The art of living is to know when to hold fast and when to let go. For life is a paradox. It enjoins us to cling to its many gifts, even while it ordains their eventual relinquishment. The rabbis of old put it this way: a man comes into the world with his fist clenched. You ever seen a little baby? And when he dies, his hand is open. Surely we ought to hold fast to life, for it is wondrous and full of a beauty that breaks through every pore of God's own earth. We know that this is so. But all too often, we recognize this truth only in our backward glance, when we remember what was, and then suddenly that it is no more. We remember a beauty that faded, a love that waned, but we remember with far greater pain that we did not see that beauty when it flowered, that we failed to respond with love to love when it was tendered. And this Jew, he says, a recent experience retaught me this truth. Two truths to live by, to hold fast and to let go. He said he was hospitalized following a severe heart attack and had been in intensive care for several days. It was not a pleasant place. One morning, he had to have some additional tests. This required machines located in a building at the opposite end of the hospital. So he had to be wheeled over there in a wheelchair. As we emerged from our unit, the sunlight hit me. That's all there was to my experience, just the light of the sun. And yet how beautiful it was, how warming, how sparkling, how brilliant. I looked to see whether anyone else relished the sun's golden glow, but everyone was hurrying to and fro, most with their eyes fixed on the ground, looking down. Then I remembered how often I, too, had been indifferent to the grandeur of each day. And what's my class been? Let's do God's will every day, not just at Bible school and on Sunday. Each day. Too preoccupied with petty and sometimes even mean concerns to respond to the splendor of it all. The insight gleaned from that experience is really as commonplace as was the experience itself. Life's gifts are precious. The truth's precious. Hold fast to it. Don't be misinformed. Hold fast to that eternal truth. God's not just going to give it to you. You're going to have to study. It took me 10 years to give that talk yesterday. Some brothers probably thought I sat down and wrote it the night before. It took me 10 years. It took me 10 years to go through the history of the Christadelphians to be able to understand what I presented to you yesterday. Are you willing to put forth the effort? If you don't know about the differences between the amended and the unamended, I recommend that you look into these things. Life's gifts are precious, especially the word of truth, but we are too heedless of them. Heedless. There has been, I don't know how many, if you read The Sanctuary Keeper, if you read The Voice of Truth, and if you read The Advocate, there has been so much material in those pamphlets the last 6 years in regard to the differences between the amended and unamended. I can't see how anyone could not see those differences and not realize that there is a difference. I'm not being mean. If you don't need the difference, if you don't know the difference, find out. And I'll be glad to help you. I'll give you all the information I can. And I've got it. Okay. Life's gifts are precious, but we are too heedless of them. Here then is the first pole of life's paradoxical demands on us. Never be too busy for the wonder and awe of life. Be reverent before each dawning day. Embrace each hour. Seize each golden opportunity to do God's will. Hold fast to life, but not so fast that you cannot let go. Hold fast to life, but not so fast that you cannot let go. There's two sides to life. This is the second side of life's coin, the opposite pole of its paradox. We must accept our losses and learn how to let go. We must accept our losses and learn how to let go. I don't think there's any need for us to give up the unamended Birmingham Statement of Faith, especially for what's involved in accepting the amended Birmingham Statement of Faith. Now, there's other things that I'm talking here besides Statement of Faith. I'm talking about life and the whole picture. We must accept our losses. We must learn how to let go. And this is not an easy lesson to learn, especially when we are young. And think that the world is ours. My will, not thy will be done. We think the world is ours when we're young. That the world is ours to command, that whatever we desire with the full force of our passionate being can, nay, will be ours. Our will be done. My will be done. But then life moves along to confront us with realities. And slowly but surely, this second truth dawns upon us. At every stage of life, we sustain losses and grow in the process. Grow, G-R-O-W. Are we growing in spiritual things? We must ask ourselves, in spiritual things. If we are, our spiritual life should improve. Our marriages should improve. The relationship between us and our children should improve if we are growing in spiritual things. Life moves along to confront us with realities, and slowly but surely, this second truth dawns upon us. Hold fast and let go. At every stage of life, we sustain losses and we grow in the process. When we begin our independent lives, when we emerge from the womb and lose its protective shelter, we enter a progression of schools. Then we leave our mothers and fathers and our childhood homes. We get married and have children, and what do we have to do? The same thing, we have to let our children go. What, did we give them anything to go with? Did we give them anything to go with? We confront the death of our parents and our spouses. We might lose our spouse. We face the gradual or not so gradual waning of our own strength. I'm pretty stout now, but I used to be a whole lot stouter. And ultimately, as the parable of the open and closed hands suggests, we must confront our own demise or our own life, losing ourselves, as it were. All that we were are all that we dreamed of. Think about your dreams. Everything that you thought you ought to be. It could be over like that. You could pull out on this road out here and not look one time and your life would be over. It is so quick. All that losing ourselves, as it were, all that we were or dreamed to be. But why should we be reconciled to life's contradictory demands? Why fashion things of beauty when beauty is fleeing? Why give our hearts in love when those we love will ultimately be torn from our grasp? If time goes on long enough, the ones we love are going to die. In order to resolve this paradox, we must seek a wider perspective, viewing our lives as windows that open on eternity. Our flesh may perish, and our hands will wither. But that which they create in beauty and goodness and truth can live on. Brothers and sisters, don't spend your time or waste your lives accumulating objects that will only turn to dust and ashes. This is written by a Jew. I think it's beautiful. Don't spend and waste your lives or our lives accumulating objects that will only turn to dust and ashes. Pursue not so much the material as principles. Pursue principles. And what would a Christadelphian add to this word? Eternal principles. Brothers and sisters, the Christadelphian body has eternal principles. That's what's so wonderful about our body. We have the truth. Even though we abuse it and neglect it, and it's been attacked from all sides, this body, this unamended body, still has the truth. Let's hold fast to it, and let's keep it. Don't spend and waste your lives accumulating objects that will only turn to dust and ashes. Pursue not so much the material, but the ideal principles, eternal principles. They alone invest life with meaning and are of enduring worth. This Jew wrote this. Principles. Eternal principles invest life with meaning and are of enduring worth. And he says, add love to a house and you have a home. He says, add truth to a pile of red brick and you have a school. He says, add justice to the far-flung round of human endeavor and you have civilization. And listen to this, this Jew. He says, put them all together, exalt them above their present imperfections, add to them the vision of humankind redeemed, forever free of need and strife, and you have a future lighted with the radiant colors of hope. Hope. And brothers and sisters, what about our hope? The hope of Israel. The Bible tells us that God is kind, yet inflexible in the requirements of his law, that he is loving and compassionate, yet terrible as a destroying fire against the rebellious and the guilty. forgiving towards offenses, yet jealous of the dignity, the glory, and the supremacy of His name. Let's don't forget that. He is loving and forgiving. But He is jealous of the dignity, the glory, and the supremacy of His name. He is holy, wise, true, faithful, just, perfect, eternal, unchangeable. He is glorious in power, the possessor of heaven and earth, to whom alone is glory due. Not my will, but thine be done. Are we prepared to do God's will? We are always in the presence of God, though sometimes we do not realize it. He always sees us, even though we cannot see Him. Nothing can happen without His knowing it. Even our inmost thoughts and intentions He can discern, though we should seek to keep them secret. We're keeping nothing secret from God, Jesus, and the angels. They know what we're doing. There's no secrets. And in most cases, our brothers and sisters usually find out about it too. It's the strangest thing. Does it matter to us that there is a God? I think we need to ask ourselves that. Even brothers and sisters, does it really matter to us that there is a God? Unbelief is an essential ingredient of the world that we live in. And it, when you're continually in this unbelief and it's hitting you from all sides, let's face it, it's hard for even us to hold fast. For a lot of people, God does not enter into the consideration and concern of their day-to-day experience. Don't get trapped in this, brothers and sisters. Don't get so involved with the things of the world that you don't even think about God till Sunday. I've been there before. That's why I can say this. Don't do it. Don't get yourself so involved with your job and taking care of your material things that you don't think about God through the week. I'm telling you that from my own personal experience. Don't do it. All the money in the world is not worth it. The finest house, the best cars, they're going to be dust and ashes. These principles that we come here every year at this Bible school and consider, that's what we got to take hold of. No serious or prolonged thought is given by a lot of the people out here in the world. They don't think about God. They have chosen to ignore God. They have chosen. We choose, we decide, and so the days of our lives are formed. Have we chosen to ignore God? Those of us in covenant relationship can weekly, through the week, choose to ignore God. You ought to write that down. We choose, you and I choose, we decide. We decide what we're going to do. What's in our head causes us to make the decisions that we make, and so our lives are formed. The responsibility is on our shoulders, ours, not our brothers and sisters. Many people may believe in God, but their understanding is deficient and distorted. We have to continually examine ourselves continually so that our understanding is not deficient or distorted. Don't be distorted. Princes and statesmen, in studying the political situation with all the experience of the past, have been unable to discover a remedy for the many evils in the world. And although science has solved many difficult problems, it has never yet explained the phenomena of history. Men with all their wisdom cannot determine whether history will repeat itself, much less give a faint outline of the current future course of the events. And I'm talking about politicians and statesmen. Nevertheless, men of reason and of sober judgment cannot help but conceive that the divine architect of this work has some definite relation to the inhabitants there. But greatly owing to the teachings of popular theology, they fail to see the solution of all civil and social evils. And this solution is plainly inscribed on the pages of the Bible. Therein, and it's the only solution, and I hope it comes soon for our sake, therein is revealed a grand political economy of the near future, which will affect the welfare, and that welfare, that's a good word, that's going to affect the welfare of the nations. And what is it, brothers and sisters? The establishment of the kingdom of God. Isaiah 32:1. Isaiah 32:1. Let's look at this for verse. Isaiah 32:1. Behold, a king shall reign in what? Righteousness, and princes shall rule in judgment. The regulation of earth by Jesus and the saints will be the long looked for golden age of peace and prosperity. Unfortunately, brothers and sisters, it has not arrived yet. And sometimes, brothers and sisters, life is hard. Sometimes life is hard. What are you and I prepared to do? Are we prepared to do God's will on a daily basis? I'm going to have to take out some material. Got too much.
We'll just take 5-10 more minutes.
Well, I think it'd be too much repetition. We are in this world, and this world does have a great influence upon us, even upon our strongest brothers. You ought to write that down. Even upon our strongest brothers. Why does the world affect us so? And it's simple. I've heard brothers say it at this Bible school many times in your Sunday school class. There is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. The way is the way of natural man, the way of the world, and is appealing to each of us. We must fight the urges of natural man until death or the return of Christ. You're going to have to do that daily. That's the struggle. We're going to have to fight against our natural urges. If we have not read, if we do not understand God's Word, we will not even recognize the situation we're in. That is so true, and I've been guilty of that. My head's thick. It takes a lot of study. You ought to feel of it. It's hard, and it's big. If we have not read, if we do not understand God's Word, we will not even recognize the situation we are in. The Bible tells us that we are in the world, and this world and the things of this world are going to pass away. The earth's not going to pass away, but the world and the things of the world are going to. If you and I are overcome by the thinking, the traditions, the practices, and the people of the world, then we will pass away also. Some may wonder at times, oh, we get so down in the dumps because what we're having to go through. And like I said, life is hard. It's hard to lose a loved one. Think about our brothers and sisters that has lost a child. I pray I don't have to go through that, and I sure respect those brothers and sisters that do. And we have examples, and I think they've put forth a good example of how to deal with this. I don't know how they do it, but they do. Some may wonder at times why God allows us to remain in such difficult situations. To be so weak and to be placed in an environment where we can be so easily influenced by sin. Why does God do that? And you don't think it's easy to be influenced by sin? Brothers and sisters, you just think what you have almost done, or we have almost done in our lives, and then take out a piece of paper and write what we have done. And you don't think we can be influenced by sin. But why does God leave us in this environment? The answer is simple. The continual struggle, not my will, but God's be done. The continual struggle in this life of the spiritual man against the natural man develops character that is pleasing to God. It develops character that is pleasing to God. If we continue to fight our natural urges, trying to deny ungodliness and worldly lust, trying to live righteously and godly in this present world, then our faith will have been tried in the fire. Brother Bill's talked about that in his class. Our faith will have been tried in the fire, and our lives will have been pleasing to God, and we will have brought glory and honor to His name. Paul says in Ephesians 6, verse 12, to stand, having your loins girded about with truth. In verses 12 through 17 of this chapter, let's don't look at it, we don't have time. Paul uses the armor of the Roman soldiers to show how we can fight the natural man of the world. Paul says, put on the whole armor. Why don't we do it? Why don't we do it? But we won't do it. We don't take advantages of all the things that God has done for us. Let's put that armor on. The breastplate of righteousness, feet shod with the preparation of the gospel of peace, the shield of faith, the helmet of salvation, the sword of the Spirit. Now there's one more element, and I saved it to last. One more element. The girdle of truth. T-R-U-T-H. Truth. Stand, have your loins girded about with truth. How vital is truth? Our armor won't hold together if we didn't have the truth. That's what makes it hold together. We've got to have the truth. That's why it's so important what we believe. We choose, we decide, and so our lives are formed. Without truth, how can we have the shield of faith? Without truth, how can we properly use, P-R-O-P-E-R-L-Y, how can we properly use the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God? Truth is necessary in the pursuit of knowledge, in business dealings, in friendship, in marriage, in family life. Truth is necessary in the pursuit of knowledge, in business dealings, in friendships, in marriage, in family life. Truth is manifested in sincerity, honesty, integrity, faithfulness, righteousness, and godliness. Truth is the girdle holding together and making effective the other parts of the garments of character with which the servant of God must, M-U-S-T, must adorn himself. Brothers and sisters, let's put this armor on. Could we develop a Christ-like or godly character without the truth? Do you see the importance of the truth? We have got to have God's truth. Hold fast to it. Brothers and sisters, a godly character is something you and I must develop. We must. Before we stand at the judgment seat of Christ, we're going to have to do it. Therefore, brothers and sisters, seek the truth. Keep the truth. We're supposed to be truth seekers, continually seeking it, and we're supposed to keep it. Prove all things, hold fast that which is good. This prayer should always be on our lips. Show me thy ways, O Lord. Teach me thy paths. Lead me in thy truth. Brothers and sisters, are we prepared to do God's will? I hope after this week we will be better prepared. Thank you.